This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Trouble looking to swing it to the near side. Back for Wheeler. Near side for Laine. Shot. He scores! Patrick Laine will pull the monkey off his back. It's a power play goal. Wheeler moved in. Back for Laine. Slap shot. He scores! Oh, he's got the Midas touch now. Second power play goal of the night for Patrick Laine.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We are, of course, all over your Winnipeg Jets and all over the NHL trade deadline, which comes up Monday afternoon. We're going to go division by division, team by team, breaking down what we think could or may happen at the trade deadline. And of course, a busy weekend for the Jets. Got started last night with a 6-3 victory in Vegas over the Golden Knights. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. The best way to reach us here in studio is via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send us your thoughts, send us your comments. If we like what we see, we may even read them on air. Without further ado, I say good morning to Ezzy and Dave. Gentlemen, a 6-3 victory for the Jets last night. Patrick Laine getting that monkey off his back, as you heard from Paul Edmonds there on the call. 2 goals for Laine, finally ending that streak, and a very important victory for the Jets after what had been a tumultuous week or so.
Yeah, good morning, boys. And before we get into the Jets-Vegas game, beautiful new digs here.
Yeah.
Nice new studio that we're broadcasting out of. You know, beside the studio that we're normally in. So, you know, it's nice to be in this beautiful new studio that we have set up for us here. But, yeah, it seemed like everything was happening yesterday, guys. And heading into the game, the big news was obviously Nikolaj Ehlers was going back into the lineup when we thought that maybe the game against the Coyotes was going to be the first game that Nikolaj Ehlers was going to be back. Or earlier in the week, guys, we thought that Ehlers wasn't going to be back until the game at home against Minnesota, right? So that was the big news. But then the other piece of big news was that Patty Laine was going to be playing on the top line, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've talked about many times on this show and has been talked about many times on this station. And early on in the game, it wasn't that number one line that was making all the headlines. It was the second line of Nikolaj Ehlers, Brian Little, and Kyle Connor. And what a start to that game. You could not have scripted that start better than Nikolaj Ehlers scoring 30 seconds into the game and then Kyle Connor scoring 1 minute later. Within 90 seconds, the Jets had the 2-0 lead. And that was the type of response, Dave, you wanted after that absolutely horrible loss to Colorado.
Yeah, I think so, Ezzy. I think that the fact is that the Jets had to come into that game and really show what they're made of. And, you know, regardless of what's happening in Vegas, people are pointing to the fact that Vegas is in a bit of a slump right now. But I thought it was a pretty exciting game. I thought it was a pretty fast game. I thought both teams played with a sense of urgency. But I think that the Jets showed, you know, they really responded. Blake Wheeler's comments after the game, after that loss, was they were pretty telling.
And Adam Lowry.
Adam Lowry, yeah. Which obviously we can't repeat, but the fact of the matter is that
it's got a lot of bleeps in it. We can repeat the bleeps.
Yeah, but the fact is that, you know, it was clear that the team was it wasn't just, sometimes you hear teams speaking after games and it's a little bit of a show. Mm-hmm. You know, you know that they're saying what they think they are expected to say. That was clearly a frustrated team that was not happy with the fact that they're playing the way they were playing, considering how good this team is. And I think that, you know, Ehlers returning was, as he said, was just a storybook for this franchise to have Ehlers, who we always talk about, is such a possession horse for this Winnipeg Jets team. And to have him come back and score just so quickly into the game, Kyle Connor follows that up with a goal. I mean, the good feelings are flowing. The Jets outshot Vegas, I think it was 6-0 early in that game. Mm-hmm. And really, it wasn't until Vegas had that power play early in the first period that they really started to generate anything towards the Winnipeg net.
Well, and Dave, you tweeted this out before the game, right? You said, is this the fastest second line we've ever seen? Fastest line, period. Mm-hmm. Right, with Connor and Ehlers on the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the way they played early on in that game, and Vegas just couldn't keep up, right? As Dennis said on the broadcast, bang, bang, right? And, you know, the Jets were up 2-0. And, you know, for all the talk of what the Jets are going to do prior to the trade deadline, and obviously we're going to talk throughout the show about that, but for all of the talk about, you know, Patrick Laine and are the Jets going to bring in a second-line center to get Laine going, mean, Paul Maurice might have found the right mix of players here. Patrick Laine finally up on that top line on the left wing with Scheifele and Wheeler, and then you've got Connor and Ehlers flanking Brian Little, right? I don't think, guys, that there's any chance that Paul Maurice breaks up those lines for tomorrow's game against Arizona.
Why would you? I mean, there's no chance. I mean, you got success with it. You put the Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp line back together, and it goes to show you that, yes, you know, Perreault played well with Tanev and Lowry, but Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp together were dominant last night.
Well, the first period they weren't, actually. The first period, they you could tell that they hadn't played together in a while, but you're right, Drew. You know, and I know you want to get into the numbers, but in the second and third period, the TLC line was exactly what we've seen from them over the last year and a half.
Possession monsters. 70% right. Corsi 4, just under that, 69.22. I mean, you know, the Jets, you know, the fourth line obviously did not click to the effect necessary, but the top three forward lines for the Jets at 5-on-5 were possession drivers for the entirety of the game last night, which is huge for a team that has struggled a lot in that sense, where they've been on their heels. And, you know, what this game reminded me so much, maybe not in terms of importance, but it reminded me, and almost this entire week, it reminded me of the start to the season last year. Remember that they had the Jets started at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they got schmeiced by the Maple Leafs. And then they went on the road to Calgary, and maybe that's the Colorado game, where they get absolutely killed by the Calgary Flames, if you recall back to the beginning of last year. And then
it was like 6-3 or 7-2 or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Just two really bad games to start the year for the Jets last year.
And didn't Ehlers have a hat trick?
And then they went to Edmonton on Thanksgiving Monday, and the Jets scored two early goals against the Oilers. Canadian Thanksgiving on the Monday, I think it was the 7th of October, 2017. Pardon me, the 9th of October, 2017. And the Jets scored two early goals to take a 2-0 lead, and they're feeling great about themselves when they entered the game with no confidence. Similar to last night, they get the two early goals, they're feeling great about themselves. Boom, Edmonton came right back and scored two goals to tie the game. Boom, Vegas comes back to score two goals to tie the game. And then the Jets are able, like they did, that you mentioned Dave Ehlers, he gets that hat trick in Edmonton. The Jets go on to win that game 5-2. Obviously, it wasn't a hat trick last night, but then Laine gets the power play goal. Lowry gets the goal, you know, seconds later, and then the third period goes to the Jets' way as well. And all of a sudden, when the team, you know, they face that adversity with Vegas tying up the game, and they could have wilted, much like they could have wilted in Edmonton last October, but they were able to persevere and get the victory in. I think if they lose that game last night, the questions continue. Obviously, you're still in a good place, being, you know, a top or close to the top of the Central Division. But the parallels between those two games, I thought were, at least they were interesting to me.
Right, and even though they were at different points in the season, I agree with you, right? Because you're coming off of a couple of bad losses, right? The loss to Ottawa, two losses to Colorado, and the loss to Ottawa. So I agree with you. I think that was the type of bounce-back effort that you wanted. And, you know, we have to mention, though, that in this game, I mean, it was a one-goal game early in the third period, but not only was it a one-goal game, it was a tie game late in the second period, and that Riley Smith penalty, I thought, was the worst possible time for a penalty for Vegas, because the Golden Knights were pushing there.
Sure.
I mean, they tied the game up, and then you give the Jets power play an opportunity, and Vegas has been struggling big time at home. One win in their last eight games, right?
So they've lost five in a row for a while there at home ice.
Right. So I thought that they killed all their momentum just by taking the penalty, and then obviously Patty Laine scores his first goal in 16 games, gives the Jets the lead, but I mean, it's captain obvious to say the goal by Adam Lowry was the key goal. It was obviously the game winner, but it gave the Jets some breathing room. Going into the second intermission, having a two-goal lead, there's a big difference between a one-goal lead and a two-goal lead. Obviously,
you take
not
that
just one goal.
When Laine scores and you take that 3-2 lead, there's 31 seconds left in the second period. You think, okay, we've weathered the storm.
Right.
You know, we can go into the intermission up a goal. Instead, what happens, Lowry gets that goal, you know, 27 seconds later with 3 seconds left on the clock. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, what, you know, was a great period for Vegas tying up the game ends up being the Jets ahead by one more goal than they were ahead of at the end of 20 minutes. So it's an even better period for the Jets almost out of nowhere. And it's 4-2 entering the third period, and 8 seconds in, Marchessault scores. The Jets, you know, the adversity kept coming at the Jets, and what impressed me most is that they were able to withstand that adversity. After Marchessault scores 8 seconds in, you think, here we go again. What happens is the Jets draw the two penalties. They get the 5-on-3. They capitalize on the 5-on-3 with Laine's second goal of the game. And then at that point in time, you sort of got the feeling the Jets were comfortable.
Well, you know, and I actually thought there was a critical play just before Patrick Laine's power play goal to give them the 3-2 lead. I thought Englund took out Mark Scheifele into the boards. And you saw Patrick Laine go after Englund and not allow him to just, you know, he could have just passed it up. And instead, he went to defend his line mate. And I thought that was a really interesting play, because Patrick Laine is not a guy, I mean, we know him as a scorer, but he's not a guy who shies away from the physical contact. Sometimes he'll lay out a big hit. We know he likes to do that. And I just thought it was a very interesting, coming to his teammate's defense, I thought it was a very telling fact. And then right after that happens, the Jets draw the power play, as you just touched on, Drew, and Laine scores. So you know, you can say whatever it is, whether one thing had anything to do with the other, but the fact is, you know, that's a play, I think, regardless of whether Laine scores, it's something that Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler take note of, the fact that you see Patrick Laine coming to his teammate's defense, and I think, you know, Laine gets rewarded, so he's feeling good about his game, of course, and then goes on to score another power play goal. So, you know, I think the Jets were doing a lot of good things. I think that, you know, we saw this as a, you know, a team that really needed to have one really good game. Now, the problem is, and the one thing we have to keep in perspective is, that was one good game. Mm-hmm. And that's important, and that's a Vegas team that you want to beat. But the fact is, you got to take that same momentum and you got to bring it into Arizona, because you can't afford to rest on your laurels. And tomorrow, I really don't think that they can even afford to have like a ho-hum game. I think we need to have that same sort of effort from Winnipeg. You got to really show that this isn't just a one-off and that you're happy to have kind of gotten that out of the way and now you don't have to talk about it. You have to keep doing this, because now it's the point of the season.
You have to validate the win.
Well, not only that, it's the point of the season where you really need to take your game to that next level. If you want to be a Stanley Cup champion, you need to, and of course we know the trade deadline, which we're going to talk about probably for the remainder of the show, is going to be a big factor, and that weighs on players. But I think you just got to keep this momentum going into Arizona and then back home, when, as Izzy touched on, when they play Minnesota.
Yeah, and Arizona's playing some good hockey right now. They're what are they, 3 points out of a wild card spot, 2 points out of a wild card spot right now? They're right in it.
3 points out of a wild card spot, 3 points behind Minnesota with a game in hand.
Right, and I think, you know, further to Dave's point, you've got Minnesota coming up at home. We know the Wild have already defeated the Jets twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wild are also right in the thick of that playoff race. And even though I think
win for the Wild last night against the Detroit Red Wings.
Right. And even though I still think personally, you know, this is just my own opinion, but I guess that's what personally means. But my own personal opinion is I think Colorado is going to nab that last wild card spot. I just look at all the teams that are in it and I still think Colorado is the best team, and it's there for the taking for Colorado. But and then you've got Nashville coming up later in the week. I believe that's next Friday.
Friday night, that's right.
So you've got some tough games. Arizona's not going to be an easy game going into that building.
Especially on Shane Doan retirement, jersey retirement night, where you expect there to be a sizable crowd of Winnipeggers who might make the drive from Vegas and, of course, who head down to Phoenix this time of year anyways.
Right, and Drew, the Jets should handle the Coyotes, especially with Nikolai Ehlers back in the lineup. The Jets are quite simply a better team than the Coyotes. So if they play the same way they played in Vegas, they'll beat the Coyotes. But the Coyotes are not a pushover. And we know what happened when they played the last place team. They lost to the Senators twice earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't take the Coyotes lightly. We know the Jets won't take the Coyotes lightly. But I agree with Dave. It's a very important game coming up tomorrow. You have to follow up the game in Vegas with a solid game in Arizona.
Well, to torture my analogy a little bit further, after the Jets beat Edmonton on that October 9th game last year, they went into Vancouver two nights later and beat the Canucks. So you have to validate your impressive performance, and that'll be key for the Jets on Sunday when they face the Arizona Coyotes, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll look back at the month of February for the Jets. Why were they struggling? We'll talk about the new forward lines, much more to come about your Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, I think we knew they'd be hungry. They're fighting for a playoff spot, and I guess we're fat and comfortable where we're at because, you know, the effort wasn't there top to bottom.
That was from Wednesday night's post game, Adam Lowry. Obviously, it was a disappointing effort for the Winnipeg Jets on Friday night. They bounced back well last night with their victory over the Golden Knights. It has not been a great month of February for the Jets. They were 3-4-2 in the month of February entering last night. Obviously, with the win, they move up to 4-4-2, but still a very average at best month for the Jets, which was an actually pretty soft month when you look at who their competition was. They played a lot of non-playoff teams and couldn't take advantage of that. And this next month of March is going to be a beast for the Jets from here until the end of the season. They have the second hardest schedule in the entire NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Obviously, the addition, the return of Nikolaj Ehlers last night was a boost for the Winnipeg Jets. Is that going to be the panacea that sort of solves all the problems we saw in February? Or do you think that there's still underlying issues that this team needs to resolve that might not be resolved until a fully healthy Dustin Byfuglien gets back in the lineup, or a trade is made between the Jets to bring somebody else in? You know, was the month of February sort of a blip, or was it a foretelling of the future?
Hopefully it's a blip, right? And I think getting Buff back, Drew, is huge, because we know that Buff is so effective on the power play. He's so effective on the back end. He jumps up into the play. We know he's having a great offensive year, and I don't think that's been talked about enough, right? Buff is, you know, just under a point a game, and he's missed a lot of hockey this year. And it's funny because he was skating with his son yesterday at the Iceplex. He's injured. You know, I follow Emily Byfuglien on Instagram, and he was skating with, I think his son's name is Kai. But obviously he'd rather be on the ice with the Jets, right, in Vegas and Arizona. But, you know, Buff's going to be back. He's not going to be out long term. We expect him to even be back as early as Tuesday against the Minnesota Wild, right? But I think, Drew, when you talk about, you know, what are the Jets going to do before the trade deadline, and do they need to acquire someone to put them over the top and be a Stanley Cup contender, get past the Western Conference Final, get into the Stanley Cup Final? I think you can make a strong argument that with Nick Ehlers back in the lineup, with Dustin Byfuglien back in the lineup, I think the roster as is can beat almost any team in the playoffs, with maybe the exception of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But certainly I would take the Jets' current roster against the San Jose Sharks, against the Calgary Flames. But the point is, there are some warts in the Jets game, and we're going to talk to Sean Tierney of charting of the Hockey Graphs coming up. He also writes for The Athletic, but we're going to talk to him about the underlying numbers, and the underlying numbers since the end of December, mm-hmm. which coincides with Nick Ehlers and Dustin Byfuglien going out of the lineup, the possession numbers have not been good. I mean, the Jets are giving up too many shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not getting enough high-quality scoring chances. I think they're too dependent on their top line. I mean, Brian Little has been excellent over the last couple of months. He's been a point-a-game player. But obviously, they miss, you know, Patty Laine putting the puck in every night. And obviously, he scored the two goals yesterday. But, you know, January was not a good month. Well, even December wasn't a good month for Laine.
Entering last night's game, the Jets had given up 35 goals in the 9 games played in the month of February. Right. So that was entering last night's game. And obviously, they still gave up 3 goals last night. So for the February, they had the worst goals against per game played in the entire NHL. I mean, is that a sign of a defense that needs addressing? All we've talked about for, you know, the last week or 2 weeks has been Mark Stone.
Matt Duchene,
who obviously went to Columbus.
So that's Evan Hayes, forwards. Top 6 wingers or a center.
And that's probably to some extent because there is a better crop of rental forwards available than rental defensemen. But is that maybe an area of concern? Are the Jets potentially, you know, looking at the wrong area that they need to address?
Well, first of all, I think what's interesting is Paul Maurice called the return of Nikolaj Ehlers like the acquisition of a top 6 forward, which obviously it is because you see what he can do with the puck and what he does for this team. But, you know, Drew, again, we always have to be very careful. What's public and what's private, right? We don't know. You know, there's a lot of noise.
And it is silly season.
Kevin Cheveldayoff has traditionally been someone who doesn't necessarily make a tremendous amount of noise and doesn't go overly public with what he's planning on doing. So to me, I find it rather curious that they have been so overtly public with Ottawa. I mean, again, my own conjecture would be that they're perhaps trying to drive up the price for these players, you know, saying, okay, if Calgary wants to acquire someone, if Vegas wants to acquire someone, if Nashville wants to acquire someone, guess what? It's going to cost you a lot because you're going to be in a bidding war with Winnipeg. Maybe you won't be. Maybe this is all misdirection. And that's, you know, obviously something he can do as a general manager. To me, I think you're right. I think what this has done, and I agree with Ezzie's point, I think this Jets team, as it's composed right now, and you add in Dustin Byfuglien, I think they're just as good as any other team in the NHL. I think they can beat a lot of other teams. I think what the absence of Nikolaj Ehlers and the absence of Dustin Byfuglien have shown is that this team needs some more depth. And I would suggest that probably you need a left side defenseman on that second pairing with Dustin Byfuglien.
Which is going to be hard to acquire because there are no great second. I mean, if you look at if you're strictly talking rental defensemen, mm-hmm. there isn't anybody that jumps out as saying there's the perfect fit. I mean, Jake Muzzin was obviously that guy, you know, but he went to the Leafs, you know, a fair while ago.
You think they'll make a trade with the Leafs?
I doubt it. But you know, there isn't a clear cut left side defenseman now that fits into this lineup as that panacea for the second
right.
pairing.
Yeah.
Well, and one guy we talked about was Alec Martinez, and it has to come from a team that's a seller, obviously, right?
Sure.
Because you know, earlier in the season we were talking about a guy like Jay Bomeister, but obviously St. Louis is a team that's now firmly in a playoff spot, right? So mm-hmm. I agree with you, Drew. There's not necessarily one guy that stands out that could come into the Jets lineup and make them significantly better. Like, I think actually Ben Sherrod has done an admirable job all year. I've said this before. I think along with Brandon Tanev, he's the most improved Jet. I really think you've seen the evolution of Ben Sherrod's game over the last couple of years, and he's been a mainstay on that second pair with Dustin Byfuglien. But watching the Jets last night, I really didn't like Dmitry Kulikov and Tyler Myers there. I mean, I thought that they clearly were struggling last night, and I don't mean to pick on either of those two players because I actually think Tyler Myers, especially in Buff's absence, has really stepped up. Mm-hmm. His minutes have gone up. But Kulikov specifically, and again, I'm not picking on Dmitry Kulikov. I'm just saying I don't think he's had the best year. So when you're talking about, you know, Joe Morrow possibly being your third pairing defenseman, you know, maybe you're exploring the trade market if you're Chevy and you're saying, well, maybe we could bring in a guy like Alec Martinez or somebody like that. Martinez actually has a year left on his contract. But what we're talking about is a bona fide top six defenseman, mm-hmm. right? And I still think the Jets on the right side are one of the best teams in the league
mm-hmm.
with Buff and Trouba and Myers. And then you also have Tucker Pullman there, guys.
And
Tucker Pullman can play the left side, and Sammy Niku. So, you know, I think the Jets are still trying to rediscover their defensive game, but the underlying numbers, guys, really are not good for this team. We talked about it. I mean, the possession numbers have not been good. They don't have that many lines driving the play. Really, it's the Shifley-Wheeler line, and whether it's Lion A or Connor or Ehlers on that line. And then you have the TLC line, or before that, it was Perreault, Adam Lowry, and Brandon Tanev. So, really, I think, you know, you've seen a lot of turnover on the second and fourth lines. And obviously, you know, Brendan Lemieux was the odd man out. And now with Nikolaj Ehlers back in the lineup, you know, Jack Roslovic is back on the fourth line. But when I look at that fourth line, I think there's a lot of promise there. Their numbers were not good either yesterday.
Not good
and they only played 7 or 8 minutes. But again, that's a small sample size. So when you're talking about Perreault, Roslovic, and Appleton, if that's your fourth line, that's a pretty darn good fourth line.
Well, and we were talking about it off air, but potentially, if that's an area, maybe the Jets try and acquire a centerman there. Because there's, I mean, Roslovic has played the majority of the season on the wing. So you wonder how
right.
comfortable are the Jets going into the
sure.
playoffs with Roslovic as the center on that fourth line. All of a sudden,
well, you've got two, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, but you've got two rookies on that fourth line, right? So
yeah.
that's why it's been speculated that maybe the Jets would go after, you know, a veteran winger. I mean, Wayne Simmonds is a guy whose name is out there. I think Wayne Simmonds is a guy that you could really play on any line. I mean, he's a guy that ideally you'd probably want on your second or third line.
But if all of a sudden your fourth line, if your acquisition at the trade deadline is Kevin Hayes,
right.
if it's Eric Staal, and your fourth line is Staal, Perreault, and Roslovic.
You have the best fourth line in the NHL.
That is an impressive fourth line.
Yeah.
I think what we saw last night, what tells me last night is that Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp need to be together. And anytime they're not together, barring injury, of course.
It's like the Beatles.
You're overthinking things. They were that good last night. And as a trio, they usually are that good. I mean, they've been that good almost going back to last season. That's just a line you can put down in ink, and Paul Maurice knows they're going to likely be a possession driver. You're likely going to play the majority of that shift in the opponent's zone. Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp just work together very well, and any, you know, altering of that, and I get why they altered it before, because you had guys missing from your lineup and everything else, but right now, assuming you're healthy from now until season's end, it just seems like there's your line. Just put them together. Don't think about it.
Well, and I think what it ultimately comes down to is the idea of depth. I mean, we always know that in a long playoff drive, you're going to lose players throughout the course of the playoffs. And whether it's for a short term or long term, the fact of the matter is you have to have the depth to be able to replace those players. So I think to the the idea that we're talking about is, do the Jets need to make a major splash? Do they need to acquire Mark Stone to become the best team in the Western Conference? Well, I mean, obviously that's going to do that. If they acquire Mark Stone, they're going to be probably the best team in the Western Conference. But the fact of the matter is, can this team do what Washington did last year, which is make some small moves?
Sure. Kempney last year.
And then, you know, allow them to kind of keep that same nucleus and go on a run. We'll see. Again, like I said, I think it's a function of, like, as he just said, do you want two rookies on that fourth line? I'm not sure that Paul Maurice, you know, he's not exactly a guy who loves to run his young players. So I would think they'd want to have Appleton in reserves. Mm-hmm. They trust Appleton, using him on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
But I think they would rather have Appleton sitting up watching the playoffs, this for his first NHL playoffs, rather than participating.
I would agree wholeheartedly with that. Trade deadline, of course, Monday. Complete coverage here on TSN 1290. When we come back, Sean Tierney is going to join us. You know him from his work with TheAthletic.com. Going to talk about some of the underlying numbers and what the Jets are. We know what the eye test shows. What do the underlying numbers show about the Winnipeg Jets? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, halfway through the first hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. The best way to reach us here is via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Send us your comments. Trade deadline coming up on Monday. We want to hear what you have to think about the Winnipeg Jets ahead of the deadline. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined now by Sean Tierney. You know Sean from his great analytical work at TheAthletic.com. Sean, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Sean. Obviously, there's, you know, the two sort of thought processes. There's the eye test, which a lot of maybe old school people still subscribe to, and then there's the analytical numbers, and sort of the underlying numbers is often a turn of phrase that you hear. We know that the Winnipeg Jets, based on the standings atop the Central Division, one of the top teams in the NHL based on, you know, the standings that are used. But what do the underlying numbers say about the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, so the Jets have been kind of a funny thing. I think they're one of those teams where what you see when you look at the standings and what you see when you look under the hood are kind of different beasts right now. They've played sort of a fun style, which is kind of a funny word to use for them, maybe in a way, where so far this year their shot rate for has been a bit above average, and the shot rate against has been a bit above average as well. Teams that play sort of a similar style might be Pittsburgh, Colorado, even the Washington Capitals to some extent, in terms of the pace of play that they have overall. But the thing that's really been strange underneath the hood for the Jets so far is, despite the good luck that they've had in accumulating standings points, their expected goals share has been kind of an issue throughout the year. And so when we're looking at expected goals, we're taking all those shots that they take and all the shots that the Jets allow against, and we're weighting them based on the quality of those shots. So, you know, that's sort of the simplest way to look at it. And for the Jets, they've actually been giving up one of the worst rates of expected goal share in the league so far. So that means they're giving up lots of quality against, and they're not generating that same quality for. Within the Central Division, only the Blackhawks have been worse than them, and that, you know, means teams like Dallas, Colorado, Nashville, all ahead of them in terms of generating more quality than they allow. So the question with the Jets kind of becomes, why are they getting the success that they are when maybe some of the numbers underneath don't seem to be so strong? And the biggest thing is that they've just been sort of buoyed by some luck, and that's a combination of some great goaltending from their backup goalie especially, a bit of a plus in shooting percentage. And so for me, the Jets are kind of like the Capitals in terms of really overperforming expectation based on just kind of not having the great numbers underneath, but getting the results anyway.
And Sean, you just touched on some of the reasons why the Jets are succeeding despite their advanced stats not necessarily being squeaky clean. And something you tweet about a lot is shot share. And you tweeted something out just about an hour ago about shot share. And you specifically mentioned the Winnipeg Jets as having positive goal differentials despite having negative shot differentials. Can you just further expand on the idea of shot share and why that might be concerning to a team like the Jets, who seem to be giving up a lot of shots lately?
Yeah, so the reason we like shot share is because we know that if you can see a team that's generating more shots for, in the long run, that predicts their goal differential much better than just knowing the actual goals that they wind up scoring. And it kind of makes sense that teams that are generating a lot of shots for, limiting the shots that they're facing, those are the teams that are most likely to have a positive goal differential going forward. But the Jets are kind of in that group that you don't want to find yourselves in at this point in the season, where despite having that positive goal differential that they've been able to maintain, they're giving up more shots against and more quality against than they generate for themselves. And the only way you can kind of live on that line is if you're getting a bit of luck to sort of buoy you through the work that you're doing. Teams I compared them to, and I tweeted that out, the Penguins are sort of similar in that way. Washington has been the big outlier, and that's been sort of a trend for the past couple of years for them. And then the Islanders are doing something similar. The big difference between the Jets and the Islanders, and the reason I worry more about the Jets than the Isles, is that the Islanders are really managing quality. They will allow shots against from outside, and they only take shots that are kind of prime chances. So their XG, their expected goal share, is a plus, despite having the negative shot share. That's not the case for the Jets, where they're looking at negatives in both quality and quantity. So, you know, it's a big red flag, and the shooting percentage and the save percentage that helped them survive it, those are tough things to rely on. They're not things that are really in the hands of a coach to control over the season. So it's definitely cause for concern as you get into that stretch run before the playoffs.
You know, Sean, looking at the Jets' goaltending situation, if someone told you that they worked hard and they had good results, you think that's a good thing. But I think easy work and good results would probably be better. Maybe explain to the listeners about your graph on performance versus expectation.
Right. So when we're looking at performance versus expectation, we have the goalie save percentage at even strength, the goals that they save above expectation. So we're able to say, these are the shots that they're facing. This is the danger value of those shots, the quality that they're seeing. And then we're able to compare it with what they're actually allowing against. And so for someone like Jordan Binnington, who's been, you know, fantastic for the Blues, he's been a plus in terms of his save percentage. He has been playing well, but no goalie has faced less quality against than he has. So the Blues have really been doing good work for him to kind of protect him. When we look at the Jets for Bisuat, it's kind of a crazy situation for him. He's got the best rate of goals saved above expectation on the chart, which is, you know, sort of amazing. But it hasn't been because the Jets have protected him much. He's sort of hanging around in that John Gibson, Chicago Blackhawks goalies, Henrik Lundqvist from the Rangers. He's faced hard work, which means the Jets are allowing the quality chances in front of him, but he's just outperforming it. He's surviving despite that. That hasn't been the case for Hellebuck, though. He's in the heavy work quadrant as well, where, again, the Jets are just that kind of a team this year where they're giving up quality against. But Hellebuck's even strength work is a little bit below average for starters. He's given up more goals than we'd expect based on the qualities or the quantity and quality that he's faced. So it's kind of a funny situation. I think Hellebuck has that name value, that brand, that he's a starting goalie, an up-and-comer, someone who's got a bright future ahead. But it's been the backup situation that's really sort of steadied the ship for Winnipeg so far.
Sean Tierney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can see Sean's work at hockeygraphs.com and follow him on Twitter at Charting Hockey. Now, Sean, here in Winnipeg, you sort of almost a tale of two seasons. You have the pre-Dustin Byfuglien and Nikolaj Ehlers injury from the start of the season until late December, and then you have the time that they've been out of the lineups from basically most of 2019, with Byfuglien back in the lineup just for a couple games and Ehlers returning last night. How does the Jets' performance change when Ehlers and Byfuglien have been in the lineup versus when they've been out of the lineup?
One of my favorite things when we're thinking about injuries and how players coming in and out of the lineup, how that affects a team, is to look at the trends that we know that are important, but look at them over time. And it's funny with the Jets, you can see exactly when those injuries struck. Up until about January, up until about the beginning of 2019, the Jets were up and down. They were basically a break-even team in terms of both, you know, their share of shots overall and their share of expected goals or that quality measure that we have. They were up, they were down, but they basically worked out to about a break-even team. Their direction from about January right until today has been just sort of a straight line down to the point where, as of this week, there was no team with a worse rolling average expected goal share than Winnipeg. They had dropped right to the bottom of the entire league, which is, you know, really astounding for a team that is in the position they are looking to add at the deadline. So I think, you know, Byfuglien and Ehlers, those aren't just common names. These are, you know, a first pair kind of defenseman, a really strong contributor in the top six in Ehlers. So these two are going to offer some stability and will bump this rate up, I would expect, as we go forward. But it's going to take quite a bump up to sort of save what the Jets have dug themselves into because, again, they've dropped right to the bottom in that expected goals for share. And it's a real hole, and it started right at the beginning of January, and they've got some work to do if they're going to start to control the pace of play and control the kind of quality and get back to where they need to be going into the playoffs.
Sean, obviously the trade deadline's coming up in 48 hours, and the first big trade happened yesterday morning with Matt Duchene going to the Columbus Blue Jackets for a couple of prospects and a first-round pick and a conditional pick. And, you know, we wanted to get your opinion on how you think the acquisition of Matt Duchene is going to help the Columbus Blue Jackets from an analytics perspective. Obviously, he's going to give them a really deadly 1-2 combo up the middle there with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Duchene. But what did you think about this trade from an analytics perspective? And also, you know, we should give a shout out to what you have has set up there with your trade machine. It's super interesting. And you know, I always say this when we have you on. I think you're a must follow because it's really interesting. You can plug in different players there and see what the numbers say about those players. But I guess starting off with Matt Duchene, what do the underlying numbers say about Matt Duchene from a possession and analytics standpoint, and why was that a good trade for Jarmo Kekäläinen?
So the WAR lineup creator and the trade machine, those are both you know, drawing on a variety of data sources, including evolvinghockey.com, which is one of my favorite places to go, where I go for a lot of the data that I like to use. And so the Duchene trade was interesting in a couple of ways. Duchene's having maybe the best season that he's had in the NHL. He's worth about two WAR if we're going by evolvinghockey.com's measure of WAR, the sort of one-number catch-all stat to say what a player is worth to his team. Duchene's been maybe about a two WAR player, and there aren't many players that would rate above him. He's been right at the top of the charts basically all season long. He's having a great season. And so, like you said, when you plug him into their lineup in the top six, that gives them a first line and a second line that can kind of run with, you know, almost any team in the league. They're really strong in that top six. Does it really help Columbus? That's more questionable, I think. Their defense overall winds up being just a little bit below average league-wide in terms of their WAR contributions. And then Bobrovsky's been just such a huge question mark. He's worked out to be about an average goalie on the season, but that's been, you know, with sort of really high peaks and really low valleys as he's gone. So I think the Jackets, you know, they did well. They didn't surrender, you know, sort of primo prospects. The value of draft picks is always a bit of a crapshoot, and so you never really know what you've given up, and they were able to lottery protect anyway. But they didn't really address the needs that they might actually have, which is doing something to solidify their top six on defense, and then maybe looking at having a goalie that they really have faith in case Bobrovsky, you know, goes through one of those valleys. So they've addressed, they've added to a top six that's already kind of a strength for the team. They didn't really address a need that they had. So although I love Duchene and what he's been able to do this year, I'm not sure that they really got to the heart of what they need to do. And if Duchene walks in the offseason, then, you know, I think there'll be a lot of hard work ahead of Columbus to try to, you know, resolve having Panarin, Bobrovsky, and maybe Duchene as well all leave the roster. That turns this group into, you know, a lottery picking team as of next year if all three are gone. So I love the idea of doubling down with the lineup they have and giving it a shot, but they can't be done if they think that they're a legitimate playoff team. There's other needs that need to be addressed.
Sean, with the trade deadline coming up on Monday, I should probably ask you this question on Tuesday, but I'm going to still ask it for you today. With the Jets, we don't obviously know what they're going to do, whether they're going to make a big add, a small one. you know, there's been a lot of talk about the numbers not being good for Winnipeg. Is there anything positive for Jets fans to kind of seize upon that can, you know, show that this team is a has an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup? Because you have paralleled them to the Washington Capitals, Pittsburgh Penguins, two teams, obviously, that have won the Stanley Cup recently.
I would say that the big thing is there are very few teams in the league that run the kind of quality offense Winnipeg has and the depth of offense that they already have. And that's without making any additions at all. And I know sort of Stone's name sometimes comes up, or there are others that are on the board that maybe wind up in Winnipeg by Tuesday. But even as it stands, there are a few teams that can match what Winnipeg can do offensively. And we've been watching a team playing without two of its most key contributors over, you know, a long stretch of time. So if I'm offering a message of hope to Jets fans, it's that their goalie tandem is a tandem that can work, especially because they have a backup goalie having kind of a career season right now. And they haven't seen, or the Jets haven't been, the lineup that they should be, you know, in several weeks. And so when the group was together, it was a team that looked a lot better under the hood than the team that we've seen since maybe January 1st. I would still love to see this team pump up their shot rate for. Anytime you have a quality offense like they do, you really want to drive the pace and get pucks on net because they have talented snipers who can really capitalize. They haven't done that this season. So if we see them dial up the pace a little bit, get a little bit more puck on net, and then, you know, have their healthy lineup as they get into the playoffs, this is still a team that can do some damage if they round into form. We're just going to have to see some of those changes settle in as they get Bufflin and Ehlers sort of back up to game speed.
Last question for you, Sean. I appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. If you were Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, and knowing what you know about the team's underlying numbers, knowing what you know about where they currently stand in the NHL's standings, would you be a significant buyer at the deadline, or would you stand pat?
I'm a fan of standing pat. I never like the prices that are paid at the deadline. I don't see the Jets as having that sort of one clear player need that they might bring in. I think the bidding on Stone as we get closer and closer to the deadline is going to go crazy, and the price that it's going to cost to get him, I think, is going to really hit the roof, especially now with Duchesne off the board. If I'm sitting in the GM chair in Winnipeg, I'm thinking, you know, Ehlers and Bufflin are my ads right now. They're coming back to the lineup, and these are huge names and really key contributors. I would be very tempted to, sort of sit pat. And if something falls into my lap, a small ad along the way, somebody down the line, I'm not even sure if somebody like Dzingel winds up being maybe a little cheaper than we expect at the end, or something along those lines, maybe you make just a little depth move. But I would be really confident in saying this is a team that has the right pieces in place. They just need to be healthy together and round into form and not get caught up in those exorbitant prices that are always paid as we get into the deadline. I don't think it's a need for the Jets. I'd be tempted to stand pat.
Sean Tierney is on Twitter at Charting Hockey, and you can read his work at hockeygraphs.com. Sean, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care, Sean. When we come back, we talk more about the trade deadline coming up on Monday. Lots of Jets talk still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He's not going to blast out Jack Roslovic, his first-round pick, and Vesalainen and something else unless he's getting a can't-lose player like Mark Stone in return. And if those guys aren't available, look, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't do much of anything. Maybe a lower bottom six.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was from TSN's Bobcast, a great listen ahead of the trade deadline. Dreger and LeBrun joined Bob McKenzie in studio to break down the NHL trade deadline. We're going to do that, of course, later on in the program.
Bobby Margarita.
As we go division by division, team by team.
It's actually not Bobby Margarita because he's only Bobby Margarita in the offseason.
In the summertime, after the NHL draft is when Bobby Margarita comes out.
I actually really liked your tweet. I actually, you know, for the most part, hate your tweets.
Yes, I feel the same way about your tweets, too.
I don't find them funny or informative or anything.
Yeah.
But I actually liked it yesterday when, I'm kidding, of course, but when...
I don't know.
I wasn't. But when... Well, you threatened a block yesterday.
Yes, I did. Well, you were being annoying.
When you tweeted out that Paul Maurice had the line blender going and it produced a delicious margarita. I like that. It was clever.
Thank you. Well, every now and then the monkey hits the right key on the typewriter and I'll just say, ooh. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the NHL trade deadline. Let me ask you guys this. You look at the Jets roster. Mark Stone is a great hockey player. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. Does he fit with what the Jets need right now?
I think so.
Okay. If the Jets acquire Mark Stone, and let's hypothetically say they don't remove anything from the active roster that played last night, where does he slot in?
And that's the big question.
Jack Roslovic be your fourth line center in that instance?
Right. Well, first off, I've said this before. I think it was last week because we weren't on Wednesday, but I said this last Saturday. I think if you're giving up Jack Roslovic and a first round pick to get Mark Stone as a rental, you're giving up too much.
I would agree with that statement.
If you're going to sign Mark Stone to an extension, and if you acquire him, by the way, you don't have to wait till July 1st.
No, he's your property. You can sign him.
The Jets could sign Mark Stone. It could be the, you know, you hear about the trade and sign. Mm-hmm. Right, guys?
Yeah.
So I think Mark Stone would be a great fit because I quite frankly think Mark Stone is such a good hockey player that he would be a good fit on virtually any team. You know, whether that's Nashville, whether that's Columbus, whether that's, you hear Calgary is in on Mark Stone as well. I think he would fit in seamlessly on a top line, a second line, a third line. I think most teams he's going to be a top six forward, but I think he fits in because he's such a smart player and he provides the Jets with just another weapon on the wings. And we could talk about where he fits in exactly on which line, and that might bump down a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers, or it might bump down a guy like Kyle Connor. But the reality is, if you're able to add a guy, and he's going to score more than 30 goals this year. What does he have, 28 already? So he's going to hit career highs this year. He's an excellent player. He's been an excellent player since his days with the Brandon Wheat Kings. I think he would be a great fit, and also because he's a great defensive player. He's a guy, if you look at his takeaways, Drew,
he's
a guy that creates turnovers. He's a very smart, responsible player. So yes, he can pop pucks into the net. He's a great goal scorer, great playmaker, but he's a great all-around player.
Dave, you've watched Jack Roslovic over the last couple of years probably more than anybody in the city, given how, you know, his time with the Moose and your time covering the Moose. Can he be the Jets' fourth-line center in a playoff run? Or should the Jets, if they were to acquire Stone, also look to acquire a veteran center, Kevin Hayes and Eric Staal, even somebody else, and Eric Fair's name has been bandied about. Should the Jets look to make an additional move in, you know, besides acquiring Stone?
Well, I mean, I think the Jets don't want Jack Roslovic playing center. I think it's been pretty clear. I think they're putting him there right now because that's what they have to do, because they like the TLC line. They like Andrew Kopp at center, but they obviously like him better on that TLC line with Lowry as the center. So I think, and let's obviously be clear, Jack Roslick played a lot of his pro career and, you know, as a center, but he's also, there was a pretty clear directive from the Jets, obviously, to the Moose. We want this guy on the wing. So
he's played for the wing for basically the last half of last season and all this season.
Yeah, but also for the Moose, though,
I'm saying that's right.
Yeah, I'm saying that the Moose have actually specifically switched him.
Before he got called up to the Jets last year, he was playing on the wing with the Moose.
Exactly. So, you know, clearly Jack Roslovic in the future, probably 3 years from now, will be a center that you probably go into a playoff run and you're happy to have him. Right now, does he have the experience that you want him as your guy? I don't know. That to me is why you can acquire a Kevin Hayes type, or you can acquire an Eric Staal, and you have that veteran presence on a fourth line that maybe gives Paul Maurice a little more confidence. Because we've seen, I mean, again, it's not a function of quality of the player sometimes. It's a function of whether the coach will have faith to use that player. So is the coach going to put that player into that position? Now, we've talked about this a lot during the show. I'm not saying the Jets are on cruise control, but this is a Jets team that can afford to do some things because of the position they're in right now.
Try some things, you're saying.
Yeah, of course.
Well, now, you know, Dave, is definitely the time to give up the late first-round pick. That's why the first-round pick is on the TSN trade bait board. Everybody sees the assets that the Jets have, and the Jets have a lot of good young players, and it's not just the young players that are currently in the lineup, like Jack Roslovic, like Mason Appleton, like Sammy Niku. I mean, you've got a lot of players right now excelling with the Moose. You got Michael Spacek. Mm-hmm. You've got Logan Stanley. Tucker Pullman is
Christian Vesalainen overseas. Sure, back Christian Vesalainen.
And by the way, his season's coming to an end, in 10 days or something?
Something like that.
And he can come back and play for
the Jets or the Moose at that point in time. Mm-hmm.
Right, Drew, and I would have to believe if Christian Vesalainen is in play, and we don't know if he is. We have no idea if Chevy is considering moving Vesalainen. You'd have to think that would be for a player that has term left on their contract, because they're not going to trade Vesalainen and a first round pick or you know, Nick Petan or another one of these players that could be moved.
Look at the cost that Columbus paid for acquiring Duchesne, which is a first round pick, two prospects that, you know, aren't their best prospects, but are
right.
prospects, and then the conditional first-round pick if they re-sign Duchesne. Right. If the Jets gave up that equivalent, so a first-round pick, I mean, I don't know, Spacek, Logan Stanley, I'm just throwing out names here based on who's on, you know, who's on the moose, and then a conditional first-round pick if they were to re-sign Stone.
I think that's too much. If you're talking about Mark Stone,
that's
Michael Stone's his brother.
Michael Stone's his brother.
Mark Stone. If you're talking about, you know, giving up those prospects, let's call them B prospects, because A prospects would be, you know, Jack Roslovic and Christian Vesalainen, right? You guys would agree those are your top two prospects, even though we could argue that Roslovic's not a prospect anymore because he's in the NHL. But Christian Vesalainen, certainly, I mean, Dylan Sandberg, I don't know if you want to call him a Class A or a Class B.
There's a lot of people who are talking about Dylan Sandberg as Class A.
Well, he's having a great year with Minnesota Duluth. Yeah. He's a good defenseman, right?
They're at UND right now this weekend, I think.
They are.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, you know, giving up B prospects, so sure, if you want to say Michael Spacek, I mean, I throw another name out there. Would you give up a first-round pick, Nick Petan, and Michael Spacek for Mark Stone? I still think that's a high price to pay.
I would do it.
I think that's the cost. I mean, that's what the cost is going to be. I mean, I think the Jets have to consider it, even if it's, you know, I mean, we talked about this last week.
You gave up a first-round pick last year and Eric Foley for Paul Stastny.
And I think the Jets would make that trade again, no questions asked.
Right, but now you're giving up another prospect and a better prospect to get Mark Stone. I'm just saying the price is very high. Matt Duchesne, I think Pierre Dorion actually did a great job because he recaptures a first-round pick, and then he could possibly get another first-round pick if Matt Duchesne signs in Columbus, right?
He gets a first-rounder in 2019 and then another one in 2020. It's a fascinating scenario. We're, you know, 48 hours away or a little more than, you know, 48 hours away from the deadline, and there's still, I mean, with the exception of Duchesne, the big names are still there, and it's still happening behind the scenes.
And the interesting thing also is the fact that Columbus, because it looks like they're going to retain Panarin, has really driven up the price for Mark Stone. Because the whole point is, before you go, like, okay, they got Duchesne, now Panarin's expendable, they're going to trade him. Well, it doesn't look like they're going to trade him unless, you know, Jaromir Kekäläinen said the deal is so crazy that he has to do it. So now you've got another winger who's like, you know, a guy everybody would want is off the board. And people, the funniest part is people are like, what about Winnipeg? I'm like, well, there's no oceans in Winnipeg. He can't come here. But the fact of the matter is that I really think that you've got this, the price of Stone is going to be too high for Winnipeg.
Even though there is a good chance that the Blue Jackets hold on to Artemi Panarin, if you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, can you afford to lose both Panarin and Duchesne for nothing?
And Bobrovsky.
It's a fascinating scenario in Columbus.
I still think Panarin could be moved.
It's a fascinating scenario throughout the NHL. Obviously, the deadline coming up on Monday. When we come back, we get you set for the Jets' visit to Arizona tomorrow night. Craig Morgan covers the Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. He joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Roslovic leaves for Jacob Trouba. Trouba into the slot to Perreault, scores! Matthew Perreault has his first of the year as the Roslovic line connects, and a third point of the game for Jacob Trouba.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated, has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. That's a long time. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com and check them out in person in the Cordon Village Mall at the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Trying to get a hold of Craig Morgan of TheAthletic.com to join us to talk about the Arizona Coyotes, a Coyotes team that has been absolutely riddled with injuries this season, but yet finds themselves right on the cusp of that playoff race in the Western Conference. However anemic that playoff race might be, they are only 3 points behind the Minnesota Wild with a game in hand on them. So it'll be an important battle tomorrow for the Jets as they go into Arizona to face the Coyotes.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned this last week. I saw the Coyotes and Blue Jackets, 3 weeks ago now, 2.5 weeks ago, and Coyotes did not look good, and Columbus handled them pretty easily. But you know, one thing I did notice about the Coyotes is that Darcy Kemper has been, you know, a godsend for them in net. And Darcy Kemper is a guy that's, you know, been a kind of a journeyman backup throughout his NHL career, but he's actually, you know, really filled in nicely for Antti Raanta. But, you know, you mentioned the Coyotes are 3 points out of that wild card spot right now. It's a huge game for them. And the Jets have found themselves up against some pretty desperate teams as of late, Vegas being one of those teams mm-hmm. with the way they've played as of late, and they've fallen out of that race for top spot in the Pacific Division. So
Vegas, though, I'm just going to put an asterisk on that. They are comfortably sort of locked into that third spot in the Pacific Division. They're not going to catch San Jose, who are 11 points in front of them. And, I mean, the Coyotes are the next team that would
catch. They have two games in hand on them, though.
On
the Coyotes have two games in hand on Vegas.
So, fair enough. So they could get a little.
Only 4 points back.
Yeah, they could get a little bit closer, but I don't think anybody expects.
I think earlier it was the writing on the wall was Vegas is that in-between team where they're not going to catch the upper teams. Yeah. They're not going to be caught by the bottom teams. Again, this has just been a really bizarre year, so I would just not put anything past some poor Western Conference team going on a run.
And you know what stands out to everybody about this Coyotes team is they just can't score goals. And Clayton Keller is leading them. What does he have, 30 points or 38 points? I mean, they don't have anybody right now with over 40 points, and they don't have anybody that has over 20 goals. I think Keller leads them.
Galchenyuk has them. 14 goals.
Right, so 14 goals. I mean, the Jets have... what, six guys with more than 14 goals, or at least five guys with more than 14 goals? So this Coyotes team does not score a lot of goals. I was actually really happy to see Jordan Oesterle get a contract from John Chyka and the Coyotes, because he came over in that trade from the Chicago Blackhawks, and at least for my money, you know, watching the Coyotes and Blue Jackets a couple of weeks back, I thought Jordan Oesterle, obviously, you know, with the exception of Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's their top defenseman, I think Osterley's done an excellent job. He solidified himself there in the top four for the Coyotes. But I mean, we've talked about it many times with this Coyotes team. It's a young team, but they just don't have the depth to compete with most teams in the Western Conference. Now, they've done an admirable job sticking around in the playoff race. I still don't think they're a very good team. I mean, I think in any other year, the Coyotes would be way out of it. They don't score enough goals.
28th in the NHL in goals for.
Sure, there you go. And yeah, their special teams aren't particularly great. And, you know, that group of defensemen, you know, look, I think Nicholas Jalmerson's a good defenseman. I think with the exception of Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I mean, they don't really have any bona fide top-pairing defenseman. I think you've got a bunch of second-pairing defensemen. And, you know, kudos to Jordan Oesterle, who, you know, had a breakout season with the Chicago Blackhawks, and he's turned it into a nice contract. He's not a guy who you necessarily expected to excel for the Coyotes. But, you know, you look at Dylan Strome, and obviously Nick Schmaltz is injured, but you look at that trade, and, you know, when we get Craig Morgan on, I want to ask him about it. But when you talk about Dylan Strome, who is a third overall pick, he went in the 2015 draft, and you look at what he's doing now with Alex DeBrincat and Chicago guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't Dylan Strome look good on this roster right now?
Well,
he just couldn't get it going in Arizona.
The Dylan Strome that's playing in Chicago was not the Dylan Strome that was playing in Arizona, and that was their frustration, is that they see all this talent, they see all this skill, and he could never put it all together for the Coyotes. And, you know, that's the risk associated with trading a guy maybe a little bit too soon, or he gets that new start, he gets to Chicago, and all of a sudden he's been absolutely tearing it up in Chicago. Meanwhile, Nick Schmaltz is out of the lineup for the Coyotes, and so they're not getting any production out of him. They've been injury-riddled this season, the Coyotes have. I mean, their number one goaltender, Antti Raanta, has been out for the season since, I think it was mid-December, and you mentioned Darcy Kemper. He's been terrific for the Coyotes since sort of taking over that number one goaltender job. His numbers are very impressive, you know, for a Coyotes team. He's 12-6-3 with a .919 save percentage and a 2.48 goals against average. So Darcy Kemper and the, you know, is sort of keeping the Coyotes afloat marginally in the pretty terrible Western Conference.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, is that it's a question of what exactly is this roster, right? We're talking about the idea of guys making, you know, the teams making runs and making it to the playoffs, but I mean, realistically, what's the benefit? You know, from a perspective of this Arizona team, I mean, you got to think that these guys, I mean, Drew, I just touched, it's kind of, you know, counter to what I just talked about, because I said this is a team that's not that far out of it. But at the same time, I mean, are you really thinking you're going to make much noise if you get a chance, you get healthy and make it to the playoffs?
No, that's why they're not buying anything. They are a classic sort of stand pat team. They don't really have much in terms of assets that people are going to be, you know, trying to knock down the doors for at the trade deadline. So I would be shocked. The Coyotes aren't a team going anywhere this season. They are just, you know, but for a younger team, just the possibility of being in this playoff race is nice for them and probably important to some extent for their development.
But. No, absolutely. And I think if you look at it, like the only team that really are the only team that's for sure out of it is LA at this point, right? Because they have 52 points, they're 12 points back. But yeah, no, I think there's value. And I mean, again, I do think that there is a value of playing in the playoffs. I mean, even if you get handled in four or five games, it's not a bad thing. And I'm sure the coaching staff in Arizona would agree with that because, of course, you want these guys to gain that experience. It's one thing to play in playoffs, and all of these guys have played in playoffs to varying degrees, whether it was in junior or college or in the American Hockey League. But it's another animal when you get into that NHL playoffs.
No question.
And so I think, obviously, it's going to be significant. I mean, if this team can, you know, manage to catch Minnesota or Dallas or even Vegas, which is probably, like you said, probably unlikely, but not impossible. I think it'd be good value for this team. But I mean, I just don't know that it's possible.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if the Arizona Coyotes are able to squeak into the playoffs, who are you playing, right? You're playing the Calgary Flames, or maybe you're playing the Winnipeg Jets, or you're maybe playing the Nashville Predators.
Wouldn't that be a phenomenal fun? Like, that'd just be so much fun for the fan bases.
Yeah.
I mean, it would also lead to some hate probably, but...
Well, and going back to what I said before, though, the Nick Schmaltz injury kills him because you traded Dylan Strome to acquire Nick Schmaltz.
And Brendan Perlini, who hasn't had the same impact in Chicago,
of course.
Sure,
Nick Schmaltz was the main piece there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So Schmaltz is out for the rest of the season. Also a guy, you know, we talked about Antti Raanta. Another guy that I don't think gets mentioned a lot is Christian Dvorak.
Sure.
He's been out the entire year. He had 15 goals for the Coyotes. So I'm not saying that Dvorak makes them, you know, an excellent player, but he's a great center. You know, whether he's on
for a team
the second
with no depth.
Sure.
And nobody, they have no ability to handle injuries.
Jacob Chychrun's another guy who's missed a significant amount of time. So when you're talking about all of these pieces, and this is a young team.
Rick Tocchet has done a very nice job behind the bench for the Coyotes.
He's got them within 3 points of a playoff spot, considering you don't have Antti Raanta, you don't have Nick Schmaltz, you don't have Christian Dvorak. These are key players. These aren't fourth-line guys. These aren't third-pairing defensemen, right? But when you factor all of that in, I think even with Nick Schmaltz and Christian Dvorak and Antti Raanta in the lineup, I don't think this is a playoff team.
No.
But you take those guys out of the lineup, and they just don't have the depth to replace those players, right? And, you know, going back to what we were talking about, the Coyotes and the place they are in the position, the standings, you wonder, you know, is John Chyka going to do something? Because you've got 48 hours to go here. The Coyotes can vary, like, it's wide open, guys.
Yeah,
I mean, Colorado,
he's not going to do anything that costs them any sort of asset.
Well, why wouldn't you be a buyer?
Because what are you going to give up?
Well, you could make the argument that no team that is in a wild card spot or that is competing for a wild card spot should be a buyer. I'm just saying, I'm not saying that, you know, John Chyka is going to acquire Artemi Panarin. I'm just saying that they're right in it. They could make the playoffs, and even though they might not go anywhere in the playoffs, you got to think they want to get back in there. When was the last time the Coyotes were in the playoffs? 5 years ago?
Probably. I mean,
6 years ago?
I think it was long. Yeah.
It's been a long time. Has it been since they made that Western Conference final run?
That was 2012.
Yeah, right before they were thought of, you know, to move back to Winnipeg. I mean, it's been a long time.
But it doesn't matter.
You're still not going anywhere. You're not going to give up.
Well,
Maybe you give up.
Are the Blue Jackets going anywhere?
Well, the Blue Jackets, I think, have a path to go somewhere, having acquired Duchesne, and if you hold on to Panarin. I mean, maybe the Coyotes give up a fourth-round pick to acquire a rental forward or something, but they're not going to give up anything higher than that.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, we're talking about the trade deadline here. We're previewing the trade deadline, and I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a significant move, because you know Nick Schmaltz is not coming back. I mean, there aren't players that are coming up from Tucson that are going to help you. So I'm just saying, maybe, you know, you take a flyer on a player, you're trying to bring in whoever that player is. I don't know, Gustav Nyquist, anybody.
Sure.
They're desperate for goals.
Yeah,
and if you have an opportunity to make the playoffs, even if you get knocked out in the first round, I'm just saying, I think if you're John Chyka, you have to consider making some type of move, whatever that move is.
They brought in Emil Pettersson, who's the brother of
Elias
Pettersson in Vancouver. And you know what? Actually, I watched him. He was playing with Milwaukee. He was a Nashville draft pick. And the Moose played Milwaukee in Milwaukee a few weeks back, and he was phenomenal. He was really good, along with Tolvanen. So I thought when they moved him to Arizona, I thought he was an interesting player, and he's at 4 assists in his 6 games now with Tucson. So he's a young player. You know, he was a 2013 draft class. But, you know, I agree. They don't have a tremendously...
The point is, entering tomorrow night's game between the Jets, if the Jets play to the level like they played last night against Vegas, or that they should play, then it shouldn't be an issue at that point in time. The Jets should be able to handle the Coyotes and should be able to take advantage of a weaker opponent and continue the good feelings that they had after the game on after last night's game against the Golden Knights.
Yeah, and you know, it'll be a special night tomorrow, obviously, because it's the Shane Doan retirement ceremony, so there's going to be a lot of emotion. Jets 1.0, Jets 2.0. So it should probably be a lot of fun, a lot of nostalgia for fans here in Winnipeg who will remember the Shane Doan who played here as a rookie.
Yeah. And there should be a lot of Jets fans down there in Arizona,
too. Yeah, and Drew talked about that, how there'll be a lot of guys who make it from Vegas and who are maybe in Arizona anyways. So I suspect you'll have a lot of, you know, it'll be a lot of fun, I think, tomorrow night. And I think we're probably going to expect to see a pretty good Jets team with their effort.
When we come back, we talk more about the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Jets will be in Arizona tomorrow evening to play the Coyotes. It's a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290. To talk about the Coyotes, we're pleased to be joined by Craig Morgan of TheAthletic.com. Craig, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Sorry about the little bit of snafu. A few minutes ago, had some cell phone issues here in my house.
All good, Craig. Appreciate you making time for us on this Saturday morning. You know, the Coyotes are, you know, I guess fortunate in the sense that the Western Conference is as down this season as it is, as they sit here only 3 points out of a playoff spot. So, you know, with a young team, just even if they don't make the playoffs, how important is it to be in a playoff race at this stage of the season?
Well, I think there's definitely value there, particularly for the young players who've never been through this experience before. I spoke to President of Hockey Operations, John Chyka, about this, spoke to Coach Rick Tocchet about this, and they obviously agree. So many of their players, guys like Jacob Chychrun, Lawson Kraus, Clayton Keller, a number of other players, haven't been through this sort of experience before. So simply to be in it, understand what it takes, understand how to control your emotions and really remain on your game, all of that is valuable as they try and build a core toward, you know, sustainable success, which is obviously the goal here.
Now, Craig, you know, back in late November, the Coyotes made that big trade with the Chicago Blackhawks. Dylan Strome going to the Chicago Blackhawks along with Brendan Perlini, and coming back the other way was Nick Schmaltz. And, you know, Nick Schmaltz is out of the lineup right now. He sustained that knee injury, and he's going to be out for the rest of the season. But, you know, how much does it irk Coyotes fans and Coyotes management when they see how well Dylan Strome is playing right now for the Chicago Blackhawks? I think he's got 36 points in 37 games. I mean, is that trade looking really bad right now, or can you not say that because Nick Schmaltz hasn't played the full season?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think anybody saw this coming from Dylan Strome based on his body of work here. Now, to put that in context, he really never got the opportunity to play with the kind of skill he's playing with in Chicago, whether it was Patrick Kane earlier or Alex DeBrincat now, or, you know, getting time on their power play unit as well. He never got those significant opportunities in Arizona. Part of that was trust from Coach Rick Tocchet in the other areas of his game. He's getting that opportunity in a perfect situation right now on a team that just seems to have the mentality of go, go, go. We'll see, you know, we'll see how that pans out. You can never judge these trades early on, but Dylan Strome looks fantastic, so I'm sure that irks fans especially. But the other side of it is what you just mentioned. Nick Schmaltz was playing really well here. He gave them something they didn't have with their center position. He gave them speed through the middle, and they really wanted that type of process. He really wanted that. You know, with the fact that he's only played 17 games, it's really hard to judge what they got back in return. They still think they got something very valuable in Nick Schmaltz. He gave them a real element on the half wall and the power play. That was a big part of the acquisition as well. So I think we just have to get down the road a little bit to fully judge this trade.
No, Craig, tomorrow's not just a normal night in the desert, a regular game between the Jets and the Coyotes. It's the retirement ceremony for Shane Doan, who played 21 years in the NHL, drafted by the Jets 1.0 in 1995. So obviously no coincidence that the Jets 1.0, now the Coyotes are playing against the Jets 2.0, and we're going to have this ceremony happening. You've been doing a really interesting series on The Athletic, on the 19 days of Doan. What have you learned from that, and what maybe fun stories can you share with our listeners here?
There's so many. I've talked to so many people, guys, at this point. And, I've covered this team for so long that I really got to know Shane Doan well. So in terms of the guy he is, the person he is, the guy who engages with everyone he meets off the ice, the guy who has time for everyone, the great teammate, all of that I knew really well. So really what I tried to do with this series was get some of those sort of behind-the-scenes stories that maybe people had never heard about Shane Doan before, like the one that ran on Winnipeg's site as well about him, about ice fishing in his rookie season with Teppo Newman, and Teppo Newman talking about how they loved to wrestle until Shane Doan arrived and beat everyone, and then it was no fun anymore. Things like that. Like Keith Yandel shared a story with me a couple days ago about Shane Doan actually drinking Sambuca on a team flight after his 1,000th NHL game. Shane Doan does not drink at all. So apparently he got pretty tipsy. They had to help him through the lobby of the hotel when they arrived in Anaheim, and he actually had to go to Disneyland with his family the next day to ride all the rides. As he said, it was a pretty rough day for him.
Now, Craig, sticking with Shane Doan, do we know if there's any plan for Shane Doan to be involved with the Coyotes organization in a management type of role or in any type of front office role, or is it too early to know what Shane Doan's plans are right now?
Well, it's really hard to say, guys, because we don't even know what's happening with this ownership situation. Right. Andy Baraway has been seeking investors, whether it's to become a minority owner or sell the entire team. So until that happens, it's really hard to say. And let's be honest here. I don't think that Shane Doan wants to be a part of an organization with the ownership group that forced him out. We all know how that ended. It didn't end well. They didn't handle that situation well when they told him they were not going to be re-signing him. So I honestly don't think he wants to be a part of it. Now, I think he's forgiven everyone. It's just not in his demeanor to hold grudges, but we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. In an ideal world, yeah, Shane Doan is a part of this organization going forward. I mean, he is the face of this franchise still, so you'd really like to see that happen in some capacity.
Craig Morgan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig covers the Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. Of course, the Jets and the Coyotes tomorrow evening in the desert, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Craig, the big offseason acquisition for the Coyotes was Alex Galchenyuk from the Montreal Canadiens in exchange for Max Domi. We know that Domi has fit in seamlessly with the Canadiens so far. Galchenyuk leads the Coyotes in goals with 14. It's not a significant number, but if you had to describe his season with the Coyotes in a word or a phrase, what would that phrase or word be?
Well, I don't know that I could do it in one phrase, but he had the knee injury. He had surgery, so he missed a bunch of camp, and he missed the start of the season. And when he came back, he wasn't quite right. He was still playing through it, so it was really hard to judge him early on. I think if you look at the numbers since the start of December when he really started feeling right, his numbers and Max Domi's numbers are pretty comparable. They're almost dead even. So he's been a very productive player, and recently he's been a big-time player for them. He's made a lot of big plays. He's been a dynamic force on the ice, really played like a power forward, and he had that big goal, of course, in Vancouver in overtime to win the game. He's been making some big plays. He's arguably been their best player over a long stretch here.
Craig, I wanted to ask you about Jordan Oosterle. I was down in Arizona a few weeks ago, and I keep mentioning that, so these guys are probably going to say that I'm just name-dropping that I was in Arizona, but I was in Arizona to watch the Coyotes and Blue Jackets, and I was really impressed with the way Jordan Oosterle played, and just a few days ago, the Coyotes signed Oosterle to a 2-year contract extension. Is this maybe one of the best stories of the year for the Coyotes? Because this is a guy who was undrafted, had his breakout year last year with the Chicago Blackhawks, and he's really fit in nicely on the back end for the Coyotes.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you throw that in with Connor Garland, who they brought up and probably wouldn't have been with the team, had it not been for all the injuries that they're sustaining. Connor Garland's, of course, been scoring like crazy for them. But Jordan Oosterle, he said it to me when I talked to him about the contract extension the other day. He said, kind of as soon as I got here and really understood the system, I really thought this was the place I wanted to stay, because I think my game fits so well with what they're trying to do, you know, with the pace they're trying to play with. And it took him some time to adjust. You know, he had sort of that muscle memory from playing in Chicago where they played a different style on the back end. But over the last few months, he's really come on. You see the point production going up as well. He's really fit in nicely, and this looks like a really another nice move for John Chyka, a guy that sort of flew under the radar when they got them. I think most people focused on the fact that either they took Marian Hossa's contract or they got Vinny Hinostroza for Chicago, but Jordan Osterloh was also in that deal, and he's really coming on, and looks like he could be a good part of their future.
Greg, Drew touched on it in the opening question, too, about the injuries that the Coyotes have suffered, and one thing we saw last year was the Tucson Roadrunners, their farm team in the AHL. They were the first place team, 90 points. This year they're fourth, but obviously they've been reliant on the players they've been able to draw upon from the AHL. Are there any players left that they can still call upon if need be in the AHL organization, you know, prospects that may get a look down the stretch?
Well, you know, they had Kyle Capobianco up on the blue line, and then he got hurt immediately, unfortunately, tore his ACL, and he's out for the rest of the season. The one other guy that I think you should probably look to is Nick Merkley, a forward down there today. They actually drafted with the last pick of the first round a few years back, one that they also got from Chicago. He also had a torn ACL, had his own struggles with rehab, but he got back this year. He's been playing pretty well for them, and they really thought last season that he was very close to making the NHL leap. So I would expect at some point Nick will get a look.
Last question for you, Craig. Darcy Kemper has been an absolute godsend for this team since taking over from Antti Raanta, who's, of course, out for the year. You know, Kemper has sort of been around the league for a while now as a very sort of steady and solid backup. Are we maybe seeing more to his game than what people had previously thought?
Yeah, I definitely think so. First of all, he's getting the opportunity, right? The Coyotes never hoped that this would happen. Of course, they hope Antti Raanta would be healthy this season after struggling with injuries last season, because when he's in goal, I mean, Antti Raanta has looked like one of the best in the league. But this was yet another one of those moves, sort of those under-the-radar moves that John Chyka made. He traded Tobias Reeder, who's now with Edmonton and hasn't scored a goal this season. He gets Darcy Kemper because last season the Coyotes' backup situation was just an utter disaster. When Raanta went down, they had just very bad goaltending, and it just killed their season. They were out of it in the first month. The way he has played, and with the, you know, with the caveat that the Western Conference wildcard race is not so great this year, mm-hmm. but Darcy Kemper has played really well. If you look at his numbers, he's above league average, and that's really saying something for a backup to step into that situation for the first time. I think you got to credit him. You got to credit goalie coach Corey Schwab for really managing him well. And then, again, John Chyka for finding yet another diamond in the rough that has really helped the Coyotes remain in this playoff race.
Craig Morgan covers the Arizona Coyotes for TheAthletic.com. The Jets into Phoenix tomorrow to face the Coyotes, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Craig, can you please send us one of those Shane Doan bobbleheads if we give you our addresses?
I'm sure there's going to be one left on my desk. I'd be happy to send it to somebody. So if you guys are first on the list, send me that address and I'll get it to you.
Send it to somebody more deserving than us, Craig. I appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
When we come back, there's a Stadium Series game tonight for some inexplicable reason. We talk about that. We talk about the Philadelphia Flyers trade deadline plans with their play-by-play broadcaster, Jim Jackson. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.